What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast using its head like Ben Mee making a clearance. Coming up, Sifu exit, South Coast stalemate, South London shellacking, and Bamford's balmy day. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we have got 50 minutes to rattle through the weekend's Football League action for you this week. So expect a fast-paced show. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined, as ever, by Sam Parkin and Adrian Clark, and we are going to crack straight on with things once I tell you about the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. 18+ for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Big weekend in the EFL as ever. We're going to start in the East Midlands. And the latest EFL sacking. This one's been in the post for a while, it seems. Marty Cifuentes, P45 by Leicester on Sunday, following the 2-1 home defeat to Oxford on Saturday. He leaves the Foxes 14th in the Championship, 6 points short of the playoffs, and still with that points deduction potentially looming. I said it's been coming for a while, Clarky. I wonder if he actually leaves, not with credit, but with sympathy at the situation that he found himself in as much as anything else.
Maybe. I don't think he covered himself in glory. Now, I don't think it's all on Marty Cifuentes. I think that the regime is cracking, it's wobbling. There's, you know, the management from the top for a long time has been bang average at best, really. And he's walked into a club that's seen a little bit of crisis, and he's been unable to still get the performances that I think the squad are capable of. That's where I'm at with it. Like, they won 10 of 29 championship games. Poor. The points tally is the worst at this level they've had since 2008. And even the wins, they were quite joyless. I think a lot of the wins came in performances that were mediocre, that didn't really excite. And they just weren't able to put 245 minutes together. You know, they were great in the first half at Coventry, collapsed. And that's been the sort of story of the season. They've had little bits where you think, this can be a team. But a lot of the time they just ambled on. And I think there's just too many players on good money that maybe don't want to be there. So, and obviously defensively, and this has got nothing to do with the leadership at the top, defensively, 23 games with no clean sheet. I mean, that is atrocious, and it is a manager's responsibility to tighten up, isn't it, and improve on that. So no, I don't think he comes away with really any credit. I'm sure he'll be back somewhere. He's not a poor manager, but yeah, it was not a great spell in charge, I've got to say.
Sam, I'm sure you'll say he should have stayed at QPR, as everybody should. I know Andy King is the heavy favourite to come in and replace him. It's not an attractive proposition at the moment because of that points deduction looming, right? So pressing the club legend button's probably not a bad idea, at least for the rest of the season.
Yeah, possibly. Obviously, long-term player, great reputation at the club. It does feel a bit poison chalice-y, doesn't it, with retrospect. Cifuentes going in there with, I think, what would seem a terrible atmosphere around the club. And as Clarkie said there towards the tail end of his answer, a lot of players that are on big money that don't want to be there. The inability to bring in players as well. I think that's where you have to have a little bit of sympathy with him. A couple of loans, I think, and a couple of frees. Obviously, Jordan James has been the shining light during the final nail in the coffin. He wasn't out there, was he? The midfield was really undercooked at the weekend. And I think underlined just how much they've had to rely on the academy graduates in recent games. And I know there's been a thirst, a hunger from the supporters to introduce the young players, because the likes of Outfass and, excuse me if I'm condemning a few players that have been playing all right, but probably Winks and Vestergaard, I could go on and on, players that are obviously been Leicester City players in the Premier League, but that haven't been at it this season. So they've all been thrown in, and that's been probably to the detriment of their results as well. So I don't know if it's sympathy, because it's a completely different job, isn't it, Leicester, from QPR right now? QPR fans were happy with a bit of improvement, just a bit of stability, some encouragement to start enjoying going to games again. Leicester, you got to be in the shake-up. You got to be knocking on the door of getting back in the Premier League. That's the reality. So was it the wrong appointment? It's something that he probably couldn't turn down, but in retrospect, it was probably a job for someone that was a little bit more akin to what it required in the second tier. So I don't know where they turn next. You need a feel-good factor, don't you, to return, because it's been miserable. We seem to be having the same conversation every week. And yeah, no surprise that he got his marching orders after losing to the team that were sat in 23rd pre-kickoff. Well done to our mate Matt Bloomfield. Some great fist pump action at full time. And he got a lot right with that selection. So we have to give him enormous credit for what was an amazing result, and gives them the optimism that they can survive now.
Yeah, they're 3 points from safety. And Sam's absolutely right, Adrian. We ought to give Oxford a little bit of love. Well worth the win here, actually. It wasn't like they ground it out. They were the better team and took the 3 points as a consequence.
Yeah, they did a Leicester on Leicester. When I'm talking about the Leicester that won the Premier League title, of course, they were mega efficient. They had 23% of possession. They scored with their only two shots on target, but they did always carry a threat. They did have chances, and they pressed with real enthusiasm when they had the chance. They were clever about the way that they stole the ball and broke as well. So yeah, like, and they took their chances. Obviously a long throw, young Louis Page it was, who's come through the academy, and I will credit Cifuentes for giving the kids a chance. And I would also have sympathy for the kids like Page, that their first introduction to senior football is in such a toxic atmosphere. It must be really, really difficult for them. But yeah, that was a poor goal, and yeah, his marking wasn't great. And then of course they were wide open for a counter. Brilliant assist, I thought, from Dakir's Macker off the bench for Harris, who took it lovely. A word on the signing, Jamie McDonald from Forest, from your boys. Never really got a chance of Forest, did he? But he was really good at Colchester, and I think he was pretty good at Mansfield earlier on this season, and he's earned his move. And I think him and Branigan in the midfield, he's back now. That has maybe a stronger look than they had before. And obviously, they've gone to a back three as well under Bloomfield. So it's, yeah, well played, Oxford. They caught Leicester at the right time. And yeah, they deserve to win. I've spoke to a few Leicester fans over the weekend, and they said this was the worst we've seen a Leicester side play in 20 years. That there were no positives. So yeah, whoever gets this gig has got their hands full. Andy King, by the way, I stood behind his parents earlier on this season when he was managing the under 18s over on the far pitch at Leicester. They were watching one of their grandchildren, I think, playing in the academy, and he was over there managing. I got chatting to them, weirdly, and he's just started coaching. Yeah, he's really into, you know, he's hoping he gets a chance to sort of progress through the ranks. Well, he's progressing quite quickly through the ranks now. So wish him the best of luck. I mean, they seem like a lovely family. So good luck to Andy King.
Yeah, they'll be hoping it is very much a case of King power for the rest of the season. If you were watching the South Coast Derby on Sunday, you'd have heard Sam's Dulcets on Sky finish 1-1 between Portsmouth and Southampton. Looked like it was full of rancour, lots of meaty challenges, bit of aggro, some decent goals, a bundled equaliser, pretty much everything you'd want from this fixture then, Sam.
It was a vast improvement on the reverse fixture at St Mary's, when I think Dizel hit the bar, didn't he? And other than that, there was zero to get excited about. So yeah, it was really good. Incredible atmosphere. I think it's one of the best places I've ever played, actually, Fratton Park. And I only did it in my final year in terms of first team football for Exeter. It's a brilliant place to play. Crowd right on top of you. And obviously it gets enhanced by the hatred between these two sides and sets of supporters. So it was a different game from in terms of the pattern from what I anticipated, because I went into it, all my prep was about what Portsmouth did against Clarkie's Arsenal, press really high with real aggression, and Southampton were going to have to be incredibly brave to be good on the ball, play through the lines. Southampton boomed it. Southampton kicked the goalkeeper every single time. Maybe in the second half it was a bit more varied, but considering they had Adam Armstrong up top, Ross Stewart on the bench, and Fellows as well, two lads that are a decent size that you could hit from deep, it was even more baffling. But I tell you what, I thought it worked. And I think credit to Tonda Eckert for mixing up his tactics, because that's been the biggest criticism. It's been too sideways and backwards and too possession heavy, too slow. Well, they played the game that was in front of them here. And I think it probably threw Portsmouth a little bit, because they would have had their game plan set to go and try and nick it high and cause problems in that manner. So quite interesting. Hell for leather first half. Armstrong got in for two excellent chances, which Schmidt made two top saves from. And Cienza, who's been the shining light really for Southampton this season, didn't have a kick until he was played in brilliantly by Finn Azaz, and scored a wonderful opening goal. And Portsmouth, to credit them, credit to Southampton for the way they set up, but credit for Portsmouth, because how many times do they do this? Not at their best. They find a way to take something out of a game, and they've been doing that frequently at Fratton Park recently. Charlton late on, Blackburn, they won narrowly, and again taking a point in a game which on about the 70 minute mark, Southampton were very much in control and were cruising, it would seem, to the maximum point. So a set piece, the new goalkeeper for Southampton, Daniel Peretz, I think teams are already playing on that. Ball's getting stuck underneath his crossbar. Conceded one against Hull a few weeks ago in a similar vein. So that's something to keep an eye on and something they need to arrest. But Ebu Adams writes himself into folklore. Just arrived at the club and gets the skankiest of equalisers off his forehead, off his arm. Who cares? And probably just about the right result.
They are a point above the relegation zone, but they have a game in hand, which might prove significant. Also, flirting with relegation, Charlton, they're 3 points above the drop zone, and they were absolutely smashed by Millwall, who are up in fifth. 4-0 the score in this South London derby in front of Gary Oldman, Daniel Day-Lewis, and others in Millwall shirt, that pair. But it was Charlton who were the slow horses, etc. Clarkey, this was not a good day for your old pal Nathan.
Oh, no, they had a shocker, didn't they? I do think his starting 11 was very, very defensive. You had five prop out-and-out defenders, and you also had a defender in midfield. So, yeah, it was pretty cautious, and they were blown away. Some good stats from the game, 23 shots to 3, 3.97 XG, plays 0.14, 59 touches in the box to 11. Millwall, tellingly, won 10 out of 10 tackles. And the right back for Millwall, Tristan Cramer, he had the most touches in the box, 11 of them. He also had four shots, so he got forward brilliantly. Down the other wing, Doughty and Negley created lots of chances. The two centre-backs totally dominated. Lyndon Dykes, Caleb Taylor and Jake Cooper. Obviously, Caleb Taylor scored as well from a corner. So, yeah, really, really strong performance. Femi Azeez had a great goal disallowed, won a penalty, would have produced a great assist, run all the way from the halfway line, perfect cross, and then at the far stick, I think it was Coburn, missed an absolute open goal sitter. So look, this could have been 8-0 easily, and Nathan Jones, I think you said afterwards, they treated it as a derby, we treated it as a day in the sun. It's not, what you know, nowhere near the level. So yeah, I don't know where Charlton go from here, but for Millwall, that is a big old confidence boost. They've walloped Charlton.
Yeah, it's difficult to pinpoint exactly where it's going wrong for Charlton, because you think they've added a few in the window and that should have bolstered the squad, or has bolstered the squad. Ramsey coming back in, important. The only one I can think of that's still missing is Edwards on the left-hand side, who I've been really impressed with when I've seen him, because he's just up and down and he can basically dictate proceedings on that left flank. So, difficult day for them. Luke Chambers, don't know if you saw that, Clark, he handed his debut on loan from Liverpool up against, you could argue, the best wide right player in the division at the moment in Azeez, and only lasted 45 minutes until Nathan had to change things at half time and probably make them, well, just try and be a little bit more conservative maybe, considering Mill's supremacy. But yeah, Azeez central to everything, and I think Taylor, the centre half, is one of the best signings of the season, is he not? I think that's three he's got. He's been unbelievable. I think he was at Wickham, wasn't he, last year? Unless I've got that muddled up with someone. But yeah, he's been a revelation, and someone to go and partner Jake Cooper as he nears the twilight, I would suggest, of his Millwall career. He's probably got another year or two, but he's been a great addition. So, and if they add Barry Bannon, which seems to be probably getting done this morning, that just, it adds real craft and quality to their midfield, and probably in keeping with what my opinion's always been of Millwall in the last year or two. They just need someone to be able to put their foot on the ball, have a little bit more possession. Can't be heavy metal football all the time if they're going to make that jump into the playoffs for real, or even better. No, it's looking very much like that this is going to be a heck of an opportunity for them to get into that top six.
Can't sell Azeez though, can they, this month? Because the clubs will be looking at him for sure, because his end product's fantastic, isn't it? I just think has he got the ambition to give it a go? They've got to keep hold of him, right? And sell him in the summer if they have to.
Or keep him if they're in the Premier League. We shall see. Wrexham looking to do the same. You called this, Clarkie, and they've got the feel of a team bound for promotion at the moment. They're in the playoff spots after a dramatic late win at Loftus Road, courtesy of Ollie Rathbone's late screamer, which saw them emerge victors by 3-2. They scored twice in stoppage time after Amadou and Bengue was sent off. Just a little nod to Harvey Vale's opener, which was absolutely sensational. But overall, Adrian, the standard of the goals in this game was ridiculous.
Oh, it was a classic, wasn't it? I think for Wrexham, it was a poor first half, but it was a classic match and brilliant goals. Dramatic conclusion. Yeah, look, I've said lots of good stuff about Wrexham. The reason I like them is they've got real spirit and the ability. They have a real thirst for goals. They want to attack. They want to go and score goals. And let's credit Phil Parkinson. The owners get all the credit. But Parkinson, he's a very good manager. On 84 minutes, he took off his centre-back, Scar, put on Windass. He scored. And then he took off his central midfielder, Matty James, who's doing really well at the moment, for Sam Smith, an extra striker. And they just went for it. And they got it over the line. It was a brilliant half-volley from Windass. Technically outstanding. And then you had a Rathbone with a scorcher that moves in the air from 25 yards. That was a beautiful goal. And I also really like Callum Doyle's first goal. Now, one thing, if you ever go and watch Wrexham, you'll see the wide centre-backs go on roaming runs, a little bit a la Sheffield United back in the day, and Doyle's really good at it. And there he plays a 1-2 around Madsen, who's very lazy, and he goes into the box and scores. So that's another sort of tactical ingredient that Wrexham have. So yeah, look, into the playoffs now, aren't they? So there'll be ups and downs because they're not brilliant at the back, but they do have a big squad, and as they showed in this game, they can turn to the bench and find match winners week in, week out. So that for me, over the course of this winter, is going to get them a lot more points than some of their rivals. Great depth of squad. And Parkinson seems to be keeping the guys happy, which is the hardest bit.
And QPR, Sam, just not consistent enough to make a late push for the playoffs, I suppose.
Well, they're still well positioned, but you know, my sentiment after seeing them just after Christmas was that they'd probably drop off a little bit. But you have to look at this game in isolation. They were incredibly unlucky. Obviously, when I saw the goals going into the Rangers net, it was that similar sinking feeling, and I probably anticipated something like that happening, even when they had their noses in front through Steve Cook's header. But they played well at the weekend. They played really well for 45 minutes, and the game should have been done. And then Mbengue gets himself sent off. And obviously it's a little bit of a calamitous final few minutes. I think the goalkeeper can definitely do better for the Windass volley, as good as that is. And the second swerves around a bit. So you have to give credit to Rathbone over it being a goalkeeping mistake. But I just think fundamentally there's two or three big players missing for Rangers at the moment. Varane, Burrell, obviously, and Poku, who has only had an opportunity to show glimpses. I think those three, there's probably one or two that I'm forgetting as well, really strengthens that starting 11, and they probably wouldn't be in this situation that they found themselves in with some poor results across the last few weeks. So it was very much a smash and grab, but having positioned themselves now in the playoffs, Wrexham, I don't know if they have the scope to do this in terms of the squad size, but if Phil Parkinson says, I could do with an extra left back, I could do with a right winger, I could do with a 10 or whatever, now is the time, isn't it, to go and back and have a real push, because they have positioned themselves to create something spectacular.
Wait till deadline day. I'm telling you now, they're going to go two or three in on deadline day, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, they were pretty busy last year, weren't they? And why not, I suppose, if it's there for you. Meanwhile, in Yorkshire, Sheffield United claimed the notable scalp by beating Ipswich 3-1 at Bramall Lane, a game that saw Patrick Bamford score his sixth league goal for the Blades, captain the side for the first time, and get sent off for the first time in his career. Quite the afternoon for him then.
Terrible red card, can I just say?
Oh, yeah, shocking. Absolutely.
I mean, he's
shocking.
Booted the advertising hoardings in frustration for card one, and then the second was a truly 1 out of 10 dive.
A character for him as well, right?
Well, he's one of the most intelligent footballers, you know, intellectually in the EFL, and he's played like a right thicko, hasn't he?
I don't want to tarnish him here, but I reckon if you go back over his career, has there not been a few diving incidents?
Oh, hello. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think maybe partial to that little one. Yeah. He didn't he not do the Robbie Fowler? maybe I'm getting this wrong, but he did the old kind of, it wasn't a pen ref.
Yeah, that does ring a bell, actually, yeah.
I think he did that. So he was doing his utmost not to get the second yellow. But off you go. Great goal, by the way. What a goal from him. You know, that one bouncing.
Nonchalant.
It was so nonchalant. The old strong side foot into the near post. It was a great finish.
Yeah, good opener as well from Callum O'Hare. Nice little breakaway goal there as well. I mean, Clarkie, I don't know if Sheffield United have got enough to make a run for the playoffs, have they? What, 9 points behind? Or is it still more significant that they're now 6 points above the relegation zone?
Yeah, they've got enough. Like, on paper, they've got enough. But over the course of this season, they just found consistency impossible to come by, haven't they? So, yeah, look, if they play like this every week, they've got a chance. Although the keeper was good. I mean, Michael Cooper had to make a lot of saves. He's sort of coming back into form. I think both keepers were pretty busy, weren't they? But, yeah, like, when you see Harmer sticking in O'Hare with a beautiful pass for a one-on-one and he finishes it great, and then you see Harmer do the same for Bamford, you think, ah, oh, this team are decent. You got down the sides, I think Siriki and Brooks were really good actually down the right, and you got to remember as well, no Tanganga in the game, no Arblaster either, they were suspended, weren't they? So yeah, no, it was a good performance. There was a stat that was interesting. Ipswich had 58% of the ball, but only 19% of the match was played in their final third. 37% of the match was played in Sheffield United's final third. So they absolutely deserved to win this game. They created the better chances. But they can do it, but I just don't know if they've got the consistency. They probably need too many teams above them to have a bit of a nightmare between now and the end of the season.
And as for Ipswich, Sam, costly weekend for them, this, wasn't it? Now 5 points behind Borough, who are second. And if they aren't going to get top two, it's probably going to be the away form that will be the reason, isn't it? Fifth defeat on their travels this season, 4 wins from 13 away from home.
Yeah, it's weird because I think it was kind of late autumn. They seem to have sorted their away form out, and they won a few on the bounce, and it's regressed to what they were at the start of the season. You have to remember they've been on an incredible run, Ipswich, as well. Was it 3 draws in the first 4 games, I think? So 3 points through the first 12 or something close to that. So they didn't start the season basically for the first month. So they've been on an incredible run. I actually saw a stat before the weekend. I think they'd taken just 3 points less than Coventry. So that shows you they have been motoring after a period where they had to get their ducks in a row, you know, start the season out, if that's a phrase. Going to Sheffield United, Chris Wilder just had to make that horrible, make it into a battle, and it was a bit of a needle between the two sides. You got to use the crowd. That's not a shock for me. Yeah, Ipswich were in brilliant form, but I think in a one-off game at Sheffield United, that was always liable to happen. So I don't think there should be any panic. They are coasting past teams at Portman Road. They've added Mometi. If they didn't have the two best left-sided players in the division already in Clark and Philogene, don't know how they're going to fit them all in. They may do another one. They were a little bit hindered by missing players, Nunez, Philogene, Akpom, to name three front players that weren't available at the weekend. If I was going to put my house on someone now, it would be Ipswich over Middlesbrough still. And it's, you're right, it was a big weekend to emphasise Wilder Championship so great and all those things, but I still think that Ipswich and Coventry will be the two at this point. But Middlesbrough are playing fantastically well, and Clarkie's seen them more than me in recent weeks and was a big fan of what they're churning out, and it's all coming together at the right time. If the one question mark was could they get the goals to match Ipswich and Coventry, they certainly answered that query emphatically at the weekend.
Absolutely. All right, we'll round up Leagues 1 and 2 next. I say round up, we're just doing a little bit from each because there's a full midweek programme, but there's one game we really wanted to talk about in League One. It was a 3-3 thriller between Doncaster Rovers and Wigan Athletic. The visitors coming from 3 goals down to snatch a point late on, and Sam, you just knew Grant McCann was going to say it felt like a defeat, and he duly did.
I think he also said it was the worst result of the season and that they should have scored 10. And I think when you look at some of the statistics, 28 shots to 8, I think only 9 play 7 on shots on target, but XG of 2.81 against 1.30. They should have been out of sight. I can't recall the player who spurned a great opportunity to, I think, make it 4, but that was the reality of what was playing out. Wigan were very, very fortunate to still be in the game or have an opportunity to come back in the fashion that they did. I think they're still a better defensive side than they are attacking side, Wigan, in truth. And I think the numbers support that. But what they've done is done some good business in recent weeks. And Joe Taylor got the first, maybe question marks over the goalkeeper. Little floater from the edge of the D. Zero pace on it, right in the corner. But I was surprised to see it go in. Callum Wright, who's been a good player, obviously got plenty of games in the Championship previously. And Owen Moxon, that one had passed me by a little bit. He scored the third with a crashing header. So it's a difficult time for both of these clubs. I don't think that means that Ryan Lowe's out of a little bit of trouble and a little bit of pressure that's been mounting there, but that would have been an elated dressing room. And I tell you who else would have been elated? Will Ameson. Did you see him lying on the floor, head the ball to assist Clifton for Doncaster's third? If you haven't, go and watch it, Clarkie, because it's sensational. It's John Terry-esque. So he's on the deck and the ball's in his vicinity. And I suppose there's a bit of a scramble, a bit of carnage going on around him, and he just heads it square, diving header on the floor to the Donny player who sweeps it in at the near post. So that was the most enjoyable moment of a six-goal thriller. But yeah, both teams, I think, bang out of form and desperately in need of an upturn in fortunes. Otherwise, both those managers are going to be under pressure.
4 points between them, Donny in the bottom four and Wigan just outside of it. What's it like when you get back in the dressing room in a game like that if you're Doncaster, Clarkie? Were you kind of head to the floor, try and just avoid the recriminations, or does everybody just start shouting at once?
It depends on who you got in the dressing room, doesn't it? It depends on who your manager is, whether you feel comfortable to do that. But yeah, you want the ground to swallow you up. You feel embarrassed. You feel a bit ashamed because, yeah, 3-0 up and you don't win. That is embarrassing. That's probably as bad as getting beat 4-0, you know, because you've blown it. So yeah, no, I mean, it's a heartbreaker for Donny, isn't it? And I think with the manager as well coming for a little bit of stick for some of the substitutions he made. I mean, he brought on some really good players, but I suppose when you make changes at 3-0 and it ends 3-3, you're always going to be in the firing line. But yeah, they'll be embarrassed, and I would imagine they'll be, well, back in the day, Sam will know this, there'd have been a bit of extra running. The training today on Monday, as we record, almost just probably just about to start training, you're dreading it. You're thinking, oh no, he's gonna run our bollocks off, as they used to say.
Lovely image. In League Two, some stories breaking as we record on Monday morning. Didn't see this one coming, I've got to say. This is from John Waldron of the Colchester Daily Gazette. Former AC Milan and Brazil striker Alexandre Pato has had talks with Colchester United owner Robbie Cowling, who is seeking to sell the club. Pato watched the Ewes win over Fleetwood at the JobServe Community Stadium on Saturday. We'll see how that one develops, I suppose. He had a lot of clubs in his playing career, didn't he, Pato? So maybe he just wants to...
He's got a few quid, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, at Swansea, obviously, you've got the sort of celebrity minority ownership where they're just putting a bit of money in, a bit of pocket money. I mean, that sounds like he wants to be the principal owner, doesn't it? And that would be almost a first, wouldn't it, for a former footballer, especially from overseas, to come and do that. So yeah, that's exciting. I mean, Colchester fans, I mean, they're going okay at the moment, but the owner has not been very popular for a number of years. So I think he has been looking to sell for quite some time.
Yeah, and he's selling to Alex Pato. What a world. Fleetwood, Adrian, is not where the wild things are, because Pete Wild has been sacked after a run of 6 defeats in 7 matches. You have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I actually think it's a bit harsh. I do. I think, obviously, 6 defeats in 7 doesn't sound good. They're not going down. They're well clear of relegation. They're mid-table. I think they could have just gone with him a little bit longer. He's had a lot of injuries to key players, and they sold their top scorer earlier this month. Ryan Graydon went to Salford, 8 goals. Sold Wiradu to Plymouth in the summer. You know, he hasn't really had much to play with in terms of budget. It's not the Fleetwood of old, where they're, you know, kind of got a few quid. And I was looking at their results. They got hammered by Crewe in August, practically last season. Since then, only 2 defeats have been by more than 1 goal, and they're both by 2 goals. You know, they've been on the wrong side of a lot of really tight games, 1-0s, 2-1s, 3-2s. And I think, you know, they're not a team in crisis, as far as I'm aware, anyway. So, and I looked at the reaction among Fleetwood fans earlier on this morning, and most are saying, bad decision. So I'm gonna back the COD army there and say that they've pulled the trigger too soon on Pete Wild.
He's had his chips, etc. and so on. The big game in League Two. Well, you wait weeks, Sam, for some Swindon content to come along, and then it arrives twice in as many weeks. But I think it's Bromley rather than the Robins. We should focus on 6 points clear at the summit after a 2-1 win on Saturday. A packed Hayes Lane.
Oh, it was packed, wasn't it? Yeah.
Ian Holloway was stinkingly fuming, but it's about Bromley, this really, isn't it? Nicky Cabamba's towering last-minute header won it as day turned tonight. It's pretty incredible what they're doing down there, right?
Yeah, it's sensational, yeah. It's very reminiscent of that Sutton season, isn't it, when they were knocking teams aside. And this was a big game. I had to kind of double-take the table at full-time because the gap between them and Swindon is now 9 points, of course, which seems enormous. I mean, the battle, I'll come onto it in a minute, at the top of League Two looks maybe arguably the most exciting area of any EFL division at the moment. But yeah, great win for them. And I'm glad that we can start on Cabamba because that is his 9th goal of the season. Bearing in mind he's the deputy to Michael Cheek. That's 7 off the bench. So I'd like someone to look that up because I'm not going to have the time today. I'm not talking to you two, but if any of the listeners want to tell me if a substitute has scored more goals than that in recent times, because that seems an awful lot, Clarkie, right? 7 off the bench, 7 in 9. And my long-term colleague and friend, Andrew, who works at BBC Radio Wiltshire, has told me it took him 50 games to get his first EFL goal across various clubs.
All right.
So there you go.
I've just looked. Bromley have scored only 8 goals from subs all season. So he's got, you know, 7 of the 8. I think that feels like some kind of record in the making, doesn't it?
And I didn't realise, I was obviously working at the weekend and seeing the goals coming in, but I didn't realise he'd only been on a minute or maybe 2. So
I mean, the keeper can't get out jumped ever, right? That can't happen.
And the thing about it as well, it's such a clean header as well. It's not like he's taken a bit of the keeper and it's just bobbled in. It's as if he's unmarked and scored the header. It's very, very peculiar. So, yeah, the keeper has to take a large portion of the blame.
Bromley's keeper was good. I mean, it's good to say, didn't he, Grant Smith in that first half? So
Yeah, I think it was Holman. He played kind of a front three, Holloway. Palmer played deeper. And he was talking about the triangles that they were creating in the first half and basically the distribution wasn't on point in the second half. And that's where the game got away from Swindon and obviously didn't defend their box in adequate fashion as they did in the first half. Swimney, the centre-half, who's got a fair amount of goals himself, he had 7 attempts. So it just shows they just continue. It won't change for anyone, Bromley, but they continue to be so effective. I mean, to win, 8 wins in 9, they've got 7 straight wins at home now, unbeaten still at home. And this is something I found this morning. They've scored 2 minimum in every home game.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing.
Incredible consistency. So shame for Swindon. But yeah, of course, Bromley are the story. Swindon have bolstered the squad. There's a few exciting younger players that have come in. So they're going to be competitive. They're going to be right there. But just to finish, Walsall, with their pedigree, the season that they've had off the back of such a disappointment. The two teams we just mentioned there, Salford. I saw Carl Robinson in Pret-a-Manger on Saturday morning in Salford. He said he didn't have a back four, so they had to play fullbacks across the back line going into that game against Bristol Rovers. They're going unbelievably well, and you just touched on Graydon that they've brought in. Yeah. They've got the ability to sign in the next week, of course. MK Dons and Cambridge United.
Yeah, they're flying.
The story developing now. I think it's unbeaten in 11, 12, maybe unbeaten 12, in 12.
12, yeah.
Sorry, just before you come in, Clarkie, I can't let this pass, Sam. Obviously, Carl Robinson got overnight oats of some description. What did you go for?
I'd already had me brekkie, but I did double up. I had a almond croissant just with me caffeine, just to get me set up for the day. I was doing some notes.
Flat white for you and just like a short Americano for Robinson.
I don't know what he was having, but it went cold because I stood at the jump. At the jump with him and his partner and overstayed my welcome and 2-0 off, and he was only in for the quick takeaway.
I like the little breakfast bowls, the little yogurt and granola and sort of fruit thing. That's my go-to.
That's normally my brekkie on a Saturday, but I'd already partake in that at the hotel. So that was just a little top up.
Did you have anything else to say about football, Clarkie, before I move it on to predictions?
just a word. There's a lot of heroes in the team. I think Ashley Charles, he scored in the game, and his numbers are off the scale this season in terms of winning the ball back in that sort of defensive midfield position for them. You know, wins a lot of duels. But Mitch Pinnock, okay, we know him from his Northampton days, left sider, whips crosses in for fun. He has created 72 chances this season in League Two. Charles Vernham's next in line on 53. So and a lot of these are from set pieces, but even so, Mitch Pinnock is a supply. He's a walking supply line for guys like Cheek and Kabamba.
I will raise you there, Clarkey, and this isn't my own work, but since the start of the 21-22 season, only Salah has registered more assists than Bromley's Mitch Pinnock, 43. Gosh. More than Saka, more than Bruno Fernandes. Wow.
Well, that's some pretty good company to be keeping. Well done, Bromley. It'll be one of the stories of the season if they go up, and it looks as though they very much might do that. Right, we've rattled through today's show. We're nearly done. Let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, before we go any further. You can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Let's do predictions and tweet of the week before we leave you then. Not a good week for anybody last time. It was a midweek special. Sam got 1 point. Yeah. Matt and Adrian got 0 points.
Oh dear. Yeah. All right. Well, the lead's cut to 11, but that's all we want to say about that then. Yeah, poor.
None of us got anywhere near West Brom 0, Norwich 5. Let's just put it that way. That was a cat put amongst pigeons.
Ramsey. Does he wish he was still over in the States?
Well, my stepdad was at Pride Park on Friday night, so I did enjoy asking him how the game went. At least they got a point there, I suppose. Speaking of Derby, they're kicking us off this week. Friday night for this one, they go to Ashton Gate to take on Bristol City. Oh, Sam, what's going to happen?
Oh, I'm not enamoured with either, really, at the moment. You would imagine Bristol City are going to have to do some business. Have to, I think, to
They never try do, though, do they? Come on. Say this every season.
But I think it's like, it's breaking point, isn't it? That was such a big win at the weekend. And I think it was 0-0 at half-time against Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't it? So got the job done. Derby West Brom was not good, was it? I think I'm going to go for Derby here. More unrest at Ashton Gate. 0-1.
Poor from you. I'll say 1-1. Adrian?
Do you know what? I'm with Sam here. I'm going to this game. Maybe I'll on the radio. Bristol City manager's not happy, Struber, because selling the players and not bringing anyone in. Derby fans that I know are quite happy, even though I know it wasn't good against West Brom. They think they're heading in the right direction. Bristol City 1, Derby 2.
Okay, well, that chimes with my aforementioned stepfather, who says we're good away but we're rubbish at home. Blackpool v Stockport is on Tuesday night. What do you reckon, Adrian?
Blackpool have been going all right, haven't they? Fletcher's been on fire. Stockport not as good as I thought they'd be. Do you know what? Away game midweek, home win. Blackpool 2, Stockport 1.
Okay, I'm going to say it'll be a 1-0 win for the other Hatters. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, both had good results at the weekend, didn't they? That was a bit of a six-pointer for Blackpool over Northampton. I'll go in the middle. You've gone away, Matt, have you?
I have.
Yeah, I'll take a Desmond.
Kiddokes. And that means that it is me to go first on Harrogate against Fleetwood. Wow, talk about a down in the dumps derby. I'm going to call this a goalless draw. Sam?
Ooh, if Harrogate were ever going to win a game, this is it, isn't it? Against Fleetwood. We'll see how much the lads were playing for Pete Wilde or not. 1-0 Harrogate, written all over it. Clarkey despairingly moves away from the screen.
I wanted 1-0 Derby and I wanted 1-0 Harrogate. So I think the dressing room is going to be a bit annoyed. But as I said, Fleetwood don't get beat heavily very often. I'm going to go for another 2-1-er. So 3 2-1-ers for me. This one, Harrogate to win 2-1.
Okay, Fleetwood then. Before we go, tweet of the week. It comes from Kellen Gordon, who's actually got two fingers making the peace sign in his sort of Twitter name thing. He's at Kellen Gordon 25, but above that, KG, and then with the peace sign, back at Crawley. And he says, with a picture of him presumably scoring, I mean, it looks like a great strike, defender recoiling in horror, debut Green tick, clean sheet, green tick, 3 points, green tick, whoosh, all caps, red heart emoji, white heart emoji, tagging in Crawley Town. I quite like this, Sam. It's a good picture. And there's some nice colour to the emojis that he's used. Very little criticism.
You need to scroll down because Liam says that this shot ended up in the cemetery. I presume he's...
You had a stone in your shoe for 90 minutes and this shot ended up in the cemetery. Wow. Thanks, Liam.
He's a Barrow fan. Yeah, I don't mind it. I think he played for Crawley before, so it's not technically a debut. And I'm glad you've pulled this one up, Matt, because I couldn't for life of me at the weekend remember the four players that Scott Lindsay has re-signed to get the band back together, which I think is a fascinating story in itself. That wonderful Crawley team, he's re-signed four of them to get them out of trouble.
Who are they? Wait, okay, Lolos, we don't know. Yeah.
Lolos, oh, Darcy, yeah. Yeah. Orsi, the goal scorer, and the aforementioned Kellen Gordon. So,
who didn't score in this game, by the way. This is just him taking a shot. So maybe that one actually did end up in the cemetery.
Anyway, I digress. I'll be very surprised if they don't stay up and pull themselves away from trouble if those four can get going again. Anyway, because it seems like a no-brainer. Clean sheets, bit of a modern phenomenon, isn't it, Clarkie? I was thinking that this morning, along with assists. Yeah, the managers used to shout out, keep a clean sheet, lads. But it wasn't something that we were shouting about post-match. I think that's come with social media, hasn't it, the old clean sheets, because I couldn't give a if we kept a clean sheet as long as we put more in their net. But yeah, I don't mind it. I like the whoosh, like the red and white. I've seen a lot of Kellen over his career, and he's a good player for the level. No problem at all with that.
Yeah, I'm a ticker when it comes to tweets. I've been guilty of doing that. I think it's quite an effective way of highlighting the little bullet points. Whoosh is interesting for me. Not a phrase I'd ever use, but
it's his gimmick though. He uses it in virtually every tweet.
In that case, it's absolutely.
He's like Big John with his bosh.
For me, it's a good, I don't know, 8 or 9 out of 10. Well played.
All right. Well done, Kellen. Glad that you're happy to be back at the club that you like so much. He's also the owner of valetstudios.co.uk. You can get 10% off your order there. I'm not actually sure what it is. I just clicked on the link. Oh, tracksuits. If you want some tracksuits, you can get them from him. £65 for a hoodie, though. Crikey. Send us one if you like. We've just promoted your gear for no money. All right. That's where we'll leave things for today. Thanks to Adrian. Thanks to Sam. Back with another show next week. Leave us a nice review. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. If you'd be so kind, all helps us grow the show. And we would appreciate it. For now, though, from the three of us, it's goodbye.